Our next storyteller here, let me find my place, is a former Pleasant Ridge teacher. Former teacher and present day photographer, writer, and blogger. Proud husband of Jerry and father of Leo, class of 2015, and Ivy and Sylvie. His sole purpose in life is to make the world a little better, but he needs a lot of help from all of you. The title of his story is called Life as a Camel. Please welcome Drew Shanka.
Well, this phrase, threading the needle, takes me back to church. From the time I was born into my young adulthood, every Sunday morning, I sat in the pew at one Catholic church or another, and most of that time I was bored. Much of that time I was distracted. But I tell you, if you hear a story or certain stories enough times, they stay with you. And one of those stories is coming to me tonight as I relate it to threading the needle. This is the story of Jesus who is approached by a rich man. There's a guy, he thinks he's got it all. He hears that there's one more thing that he doesn't have yet, and he goes to Jesus to ask about it. Master, what must I do to go to heaven? He wants that. And Jesus, he gives a pat and incomplete answer. He says, yeah, just follow the rules. The guy says, oh, you mean like the Ten Commandments? Don't murder, don't steal, don't take the Lord's name in vain. Jesus says, yeah. The guy says, well, I already follow all those, so we're good, right? I'm in? And Jesus says, one more thing. Go and sell everything you own and give the money to the poor. Then come back to me and we'll talk. Well, the guy walks away deflated, sad. He thought he was going to get that one more thing, but he doesn't want to trade what he's got now for something that may or may not happen in the future. And if it does happen, it might not be that great. At this point, Jesus turns to his friends and he says, you know, guys, it's harder for a rich man to go to heaven than it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. Well, I hear this story, I think it doesn't apply to me because I'm not rich, right? I'm not Bill Gates. I'm not Oprah Winfrey. I drive a used car. I live in an old farmhouse. I come from Viroqua. I'm not rich. But two things about wealth. Wealth is relative, and wealth is a matter of perception. I am, in fact, filthy rich. I am a very, very wealthy man, and sometimes that gets me into trouble. Case in point, 1990. I'm 27 years old. I've got a wonderful travel style. I like to work for 6 months, save up my money, quit my job, and go travel for a month. And then I go home, and I do it all again. And I do it again and again. My 20s and my 30s, I took dozens of trips that way. On this particular trip, I pack all my good stuff into my 1980 Honda Civic hatchback. I've got a backpack full of camping gear from REI. I've got a milk crate with some really great cassettes and mixtapes. I've got a cooler full of ice and beverages and food. I've got a camera bag with one body and three lenses, and I'm good to go. I leave Minneapolis. I head west. I go straight for Rapid City. It's my first stop on this trip. I pull into Rapid City. I'm thinking, I want to have an adventure, so I'm not going to dinner at TGI Fridays in some suburban shopping mall. I decided I was going to go to the roughest part of town and find the roughest bar. This was going to be great. It didn't take me long to find the roughest part of town. I pulled into it, I parked my car there, and before I got out of my car, I got cold feet. I said to myself, do I really want to park my car in the roughest part of town with all this good stuff in it? What if somebody steals my stuff? They break the window, they take my camping gear, which is worthless, or my camera gear, and they pawn it for $75, or my cassettes, also worthless. What if they steal my journal? and they read it and they don't appreciate my deep thoughts. Somewhere outside of me, related to somewhere inside of me, I could sense the presence of a little old woman with long silver hair and deep, black, compassionate eyes. She had thin, bony hands and pale, cold skin and blue veins. She reaches out and takes my hands in hers and says, "Aw, Drew, it's awfully hard to have an adventure when you're worried about your stuff. Did you know it's harder for a rich man to go to heaven than it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle?" Well, remembering that story pushed me over the edge. I locked the car and I left. And I didn't think about my stuff all that much for the rest of the night. As I crossed the street on my way to adventure, I was approached by a stranger, a young woman about my age, going on 60, maybe 70. She walks up to me, she says, "I'll buy you a drink if you help me find Ray's Lounge." Her name was Brenda. I said, "Hi, Brenda, I'm Drew. I'd be happy to help you find Ray's Lounge, but you don't have to buy me a drink." So off we went. I walked next to her to be respectful, to be present, to hear her and try to understand her speech, to catch her if she fell, because she seemed like she was going to fall. I stayed apart from her because I didn't want to appear to be on a date. A truck pulls up. Two guys get out. I walk up to them. I say, "Hey, guys, can you tell us where Ray's Lounge is?" They just look at me, and they look at Brenda, and they look at me like, this doesn't compute. Guy gets a big grin, and he says, "Oh, sure. It's 7 blocks down this road and 1 block to your left." And they both start laughing. So off we go. And as we walk, I listen to Brenda. She tells me about life in Rapid City. She tells me about life in Pine Ridge. She talks about her parents, her deceased siblings. She talks about the child that she had that she'll never see again. She talked about the police and their cruelty. She talked about social services. And I just walked next to her and I listened. We passed the Hotel Alex Johnson. This is an 8 or 9 story brownstone building that looks like a Swiss chalet. It's fancy. It's probably the 1920s masterpiece of Rapid City's glory days. And standing outside of the Hotel Alex Johnson are, I kid you not, Buffalo Bill Cody and Annie Oakley. They are performers in perfect costumes, perfect little cowboy hats, hand-stitched Western shirts with pearl snaps. She's wearing a skirt. He's got skin-tight jeans on. They both have boots with spurs and toy rifles slung over their shoulders. I don't know, maybe it's their smoke break before their performance or after their performance or between performances. But as we walk past them, they stare at us with expressions of complete hatred. Brenda scurries. I keep up with her. 2 blocks later, the police pull up. 2 cops, 1 squad car, windows down, driving next to us, pacing us, not saying anything. Brenda tries to hide, but she can't hide. They know her. They look at me. They have no idea who I am. I think they're trying to figure us out. And thankfully, they drove off slowly. We went to the end of this 7-block route, this wild goose chase. Ray's Lounge was not there. We turned around, came back the way we came from. On the way, we passed an art gallery. We walk up to it. It's wildlife art or Native American art. Inside, you can see a bald eagle carved with a chainsaw on a tree stump. You can see paintings of beavers and bison and timber wolves. There are dream catchers hanging from the ceiling. And 1 giant canvas in the middle of the plate glass window depicting a proud Lakota chief standing on a mountaintop. He looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger times 10. And he's holding in his arms what I can only describe as a buxom babe clad in a buckskin bikini. Brenda points at it and says, "That's my heritage." And then she lifts her pointer finger up and points up and looks overhead, not at the sky, but at a woodcut spotlit sign that says, "The Perfect Hanging Gallery." And as she's looking up, she loses her balance, spins, and falls to the sidewalk. And I catch her, and I help her up, and for a second, she's humiliated. She looks like she's going to cry. But then she laughs, loud and long, and fills that otherwise empty side street with her laughter. Two blocks on, we found Ray's Lounge. We open the doors, it's Friday night, the place is packed. She is instantly absorbed into this crowd. She's off to find her friends, and she will buy a drink, or someone will buy her a drink. And I won't see her again, and I won't talk to her again. I'm thinking to myself, well, this has been interesting, and I don't want it to end, but I don't know if I can stay here. I look around a little bit for acknowledgement, you know, some kind of sign that there's a place for me, at least for a little while in this bar. And I get it from the bartender at the other end of the bar. He looks at me, gives me the slightest acknowledgement, and I sit down on the stool next to the exit. I reach into my day pack and pull out a notebook and a pen, not because I want to write anything, but because I want to look busy, because I'm sure nobody's going to talk to me in this place. The bartender brings me a beer. A young man comes and sits on the stool next to me. He leans into me and he says, "Are you with Brenda tonight?" His name is Jimmy. I say, "No, Jimmy, I was just walking around. I met her on the sidewalk. She asked me to help her find this place. She offered to buy me a drink, but I don't want the drink." He says, "Man, you don't ever let a woman like that buy you a drink. You let her buy you one drink, she'll suck you dry for 10. I say, "Thanks, Jimmy. That sounds like good advice." He looks at my notebook. He looks back at me and he says, "Are you a journalist?" I say, "Well, no, not really. I'm just messing around. I have worked for a paper, but I don't now. I'm not writing a story." He says, "You're a writing man." "Yeah, maybe." "I got a story to tell you. And it begins like this. A long black cloud is following me." And for the next 2 hours, he told me his life story. 2 hours later, three beers later, I made my way from Ray's Lounge back to my car, which was intact and all of my stuff was in it. Jimmy gave me a lot to think about. Brenda gave me even more to think about. I also thought about how I had almost missed out on this opportunity to have an encounter, to meet someone, to maybe gain some understanding because I was afraid of losing my stuff. I thought about it as I drove across Montana and Wyoming and Colorado and Nebraska over the next 3 weeks. And I'm still thinking about it today. I don't have any conclusions. All of my thoughts are works in progress. But I've got this going on. I've heard that there's a life out there, something more authentic, where people really connect, where they see each other, where they appreciate each other, no matter the circumstances. And I've heard that that life is on the other side of the eye of a needle. And on my side, I feel like a rich man or a camel, and I've got to let go of my stuff and meet people where they're at. Thank you.